Shalom, welcome to SJTF. This is Chaim ben Pesach. This program is dedicated to elevating the souls of Simcha Chasdai, Pesach ben Dov, Barry Hoffman, Reuven Hoffman, Meir ben Yecheskel, and Yosef ben Meir. Before we get to our many questions from our great JTFers, I'm going to try to be brief this week. I'm going to review the statistics that I love to review. I know I've done this several weeks in a row, so this week I'm going to really try to be brief. I'm going to review the statistics, the positive statistics again from our Hebrew Facebook page and our advertising campaign because the news, once again, is very good news. Baruch Hashem, thank God. First of all, bear in mind that we started our advertising campaign on the Hebrew Facebook page on March 18th of this year. That's about a month and a half ago. It's now May 4th, so that's about a month and a half ago. In 1.5 months, we've gone from 1,830 likes, are basically members, that's in effect members on Facebook, from 1,830 likes to the last time I checked about 20 minutes ago, 5,537 likes. 5,537 likes. That's more than triple. That's more than triple the 1,830 likes that we had a month and a half ago when we first started the advertising campaign. We are increasing our membership, our likes, or our membership on Facebook by 600 to 700 likes a week. That's the rate right now. Of course, there's no guarantee that that rate will continue at all times. Who knows? But right now, Baruch Hashem, thank God, our rate of increase is 600 to 700 likes a week. So at that rate, we would go from 5,537 likes in 2 years, let's say, to about 40,000 or 50,000 likes. 40 or 50,000 likes in a country the size of Israel, where there are only 6 million Jews, 40 or 50,000 likes would make us a really big, major Facebook entity. And remember, Naftali Bennett, who has 12 seats in the Knesset, he started on Facebook. He was very wealthy, he had a business. But with his money, he was able to fund a big advertising campaign, and he created a huge Facebook page and Facebook following, and that was the beginning of his political career. And there are other examples as well. I can give you other examples. Facebook has launched political movements in Israel and in other countries. So we're hoping that the same thing will happen for our movement. Koach Mesima Yehudi. Koach Mesima Yehudi means Jewish task force in Hebrew. Hayamin Hamiti, which means the real right. We now use also the name Koach Mesima Yehudi, which means Jewish task force, because I discovered that Israeli Jews love that name. They love the name Jewish task force when it's translated into Hebrew. Koach Mesima Yehudi. So we call ourselves Koach Mesima Yehudi Hayamin Hamiti now. We use both of those names. Now, we get over 60,000 individual visits to our page every week. Over 60,000 individual visits, which in a country of 6 million Israeli Jews is again substantial. That means that's 1% of Israel's population visiting our Facebook page, our Hebrew Facebook page every week. So we already have a substantial audience. 60,000 people in Israeli terms, this is a substantial audience. And it's growing all the time, Baruch Hashem, thank God. That's where we stand in terms of the Hebrew Facebook movement. The Hebrew movement and the Hebrew Facebook page, things are much better than we expected. We did not anticipate this level of growth. And I think this is proving that we were right when we said all of these years, if we just could reach the people of Israel, our message will resonate. Our message is a message that the people, that many Israeli Jews will agree with and will support. That's what we always contended all of these years, if you recall. And I think that this is being proven right now by these statistics. I think these statistics are proving that we were right. So, let's hope that that continues. Let's hope that we continue. And I really, if the more money we get, if we had more money, we would increase the campaign and we'd grow at a faster rate, which is very important because the people of Israel face grave dangers. And the faster we grow and the faster we become a major force, the better it would be for the Jewish people and for Israel. So that's our situation with the Hebrew movement and the Hebrew Facebook page. We urgently need to find sources of funding so that when we do, God willing, become a big movement on Facebook, that we'll be able to have a movement that we can fund in Israel that will be, we won't just have a lot of people and a big audience. We'll also be able to have a movement on the ground in Israel to do something with that. That's also going to be essential. So we urgently need more funding. We urgently are going to need more funds, not just for the advertising campaign, but also to do something with the movement now that we're getting all these people and all these supporters and all these visitors. What do we do with these people now? How do we transform this now into a major political force? We're going to need funding for that, and we don't have enough funds for that. So that's going to be another major issue that's going to come up. We're not at that point yet. We're still 5,500 plus likes. But when we get to the point where we have tens of thousands, we will urgently need more money. We'll urgently need more money in order to translate that into making that into a major political force on the ground in Israel. So let's hope, God willing, that we find a way to do that, and hopefully our great JTFers will come up with a solution, and our great JTFers have been helping us, and God bless the ones that have been helping us. That's certainly wonderful news, those that have been helping us. You see what you're doing. You're reaching people directly with a Kahanist message, with a message of truth. So you're doing something which is very, very, which is the most significant thing that I think you could be doing. In addition to that, by the way, the other piece of good news in Israel is the magnificent fighting spirit of more and more young Jews in Israel. The Jewish youth of Yitzhar, which is a magnificent, heroic Jewish settlement. They call it a settlement. It's a Jewish town in Judea and Samaria. And they are fighting to expand the Jewish presence in Judea and Samaria. They're fighting against those that tear down Jewish homes and expel Jews from their homes. And it's a heroic battle. There's also a group called Tag Mechir, Price Tag, an underground group that carries out various underground activities. We're not allowed to applaud their activities. We're not allowed to praise or applaud their activities because their activities, again, are illegal. And what do I mean by illegal? They spray paint graffiti on mosques and on cars of Arabs. And they puncture the tires on cars of Arabs. And hundreds of Arab cars have had their tires punctured. And the Jewish politicians in Israel say, oh, this is terrible. This is Jewish terrorism. This is terrorist activity. We must destroy these Jewish terrorists. They're spray painting graffiti and puncturing car tires to retaliate for Arabs murdering. Thousands of Israeli Jews have been murdered by the Arabs, and the Arabs promised to murder millions. And so these young Jews have retaliated. And they're having a very hard time dealing with this, the Israeli authorities, because when these kids are arrested, they don't talk. They learned from the Jewish hero Noam Federman, they learned that if you keep your mouth shut, if everybody keeps their mouth shut, they don't have a case. That you'll be out of there eventually. They'll hold you for a while, but eventually they'll let you go. You may be held for 30 days even, but eventually you'll get out if you keep your mouth shut. So they learned that from Noam Federman. And they're doing that. And so the police and the army and the authorities that want to protect the Arabs from retaliation are having a hard time dealing with these young Jews. Now, you may say, well, graffiti and puncturing car tires, it has a major effect. It has a major effect. True, they're not going out and killing Arabs the way Arabs are murdering Jews. That's true. And they're not going out doing major acts, even though the Israeli authorities keep calling this Jewish terrorism. Graffiti and puncturing tires is not terrorism. I mean, that's absurd. Yet it still has a major effect. Because when large numbers of Arabs see all four of their car tires punctured, and this happens over and over again in all types of Arab villages and Arab neighborhoods, and hundreds of cars, this has happened, there are hundreds of incidents like this. When this is happening all over Israel in retaliation for what the Arabs are doing to Jews, because the Arabs have been doing this to Jews for many, many years. When this happens, it lowers the quality of life and creates tension and problems for the Arabs in Israel. And what does that do? Number one, when there's tension between Arabs and Jews in Israel, there's less assimilation and intermarriage because the Arabs and the Jews mingle less. And so there's less potential for intermarriage and assimilation. Second, it sours the atmosphere and prevents opportunities to achieve negotiations and other things which are always bad for Israel and the Jewish people. Whenever there's negotiations and agreements and anything that makes life comfortable for the Arabs, that is terrible for the Jews in Israel. And number three, talking about making life comfortable for the Arabs, the more uncomfortable life is for them. If their car tires are always punctured, and if they're getting their mosques and their homes and their cars are being spray painted all the time, and there's just constant problems, that makes life difficult for them in Israel and encourages them to want to leave. And also discourages other Arabs from outside of Israel from wanting to come to Israel in the first place. So it has an effect. I can't, and we cannot, applaud Tag Mechir, which means price tag. We are not allowed to applaud their activities because their activities are illegal. Even graffiti is illegal. I mean, technically, it's illegal. And they're making a real big deal over it. But spraying graffiti on the Arab cars and Arab property is illegal. And puncturing their car tires is illegal. And doing some of the other things they've done, I mean, these are illegal activities. So we're not allowed to praise illegal activities because we're a law-abiding organization. But we just want you to be aware of the fact that this is representative of a fighting spirit among some of the young Jews, some of the brave young Jews in Judea and Samaria, this fighting spirit. And it's causing real headaches for the Netanyahu regime and for those who want to work out agreements with the Arabs and everything. These young Jews in Judea and Samaria don't want agreements. They don't want to create smooth sailing to create a so-called Palestine state, God forbid. They know that's national suicide and they want to do everything they can to prevent that. And they also want to show the Israeli army and the Israeli police and the Israeli politicians and the Israeli media that there's going to be a price to be paid when Jewish homes are destroyed and when you attack and harass and make life impossible for Jews in Judea and Samaria, there's going to be retaliation. You're going to pay a price. That's also what they're trying to show. That's why the name of their group is Price Tag. It's just a symbol of the fighting spirit that exists among growing numbers of young Jews in Israel who are fed up. And we are the address for Jews that are fed up in Israel who want to express themselves legally in a law-abiding way. If people want to, in a law-abiding way, protest and oppose what the establishment is doing, what the Erev Rav, the establishment in Israel, is doing to the Jews of Israel, those that want to oppose in a law-abiding way, we are the ones that they're going to be able to turn to as we become bigger and bigger and more important, and we scrupulously follow the law and we don't violate any laws. We're the group they can turn to speak out and to organize and to protest and to show that the people of Israel do not support policies that are suicidal. So I think all of those are important developments, and just wanted to share those developments with our great members. Of course, we need your help, as we mention every week. We need your help when we put up videos or cartoons or posts and you see it on the English forum. Please help us with them. Please like them, favorite, comment, whether it's on YouTube or whether it's on Facebook or wherever. Do whatever you can to spread the word. Share them. Do whatever you can to spread the word and spread our message as far and as wide as we can. Help us. Help us with the Facebook and YouTube and Google search engines. When you favorite and like and comment, it increases our presence on the search engines. It's all good for us. Plus, of course, you can directly help by sending it to other people, making other people aware of it, and just spreading the word. It's important. Secondly, of course, on our forum and on our Facebook pages, we need good posts. We need good posts, quality posts, so that people will want to join with us and be involved with us. And third, last but not least, of course, our biggest setback has always been and continues to be financial. It's because of lack of money that Jabotinsky and his followers were unable to prevent the Holocaust and save the Jews during the Holocaust. That was the reason. If they had had more money and would have been able to finance, and they had a lot of supporters, but they didn't have the money to compete with the self-hating Jews, with David Ben-Gurion and Chaim Weizmann and the self-hating Jews whose agenda made the Holocaust possible. We need financial support. It's our biggest problem. It's always been our biggest disadvantage. If only we had that, you can see what we're able to do. If only we had the financial support that we need. And so if you want to be able to say, I am helping to reach many, many thousands of new Jews with a message, because every check, every money order, every cash donation does really help. It really does make a difference in terms of helping us reach more people and helping our movement become a bigger movement faster. If you want to be part of that, then we need your support. So, again, God bless the great JTFers that send their checks and money orders and cash donations to our post office box. We urge everybody, whatever you can, as much as you can, we need your support. Very, very important. If you prefer to do it on our Hebrew main page on hayamin.org, there's a donate button there. You could do it conveniently with your credit card. So I think the news is pretty good, but the challenges are very big if we want to become the mass movement that we dream of becoming. But we have hope. We have a chance. We have a fighting chance here of doing it. We need your help, though, to do it. We have a chance. We have a shot. But we need your help to make this dream come true, and we could change the world and change history, God willing, if everybody helps us and participates and does what has to be done to make it happen, God willing. Now let's go to our questions from our great JTFers, and we start out with, let me just make sure that everything's okay over here. Yep, it looks okay. And we start out with our great friend Yemach Shmo Jabnik, who writes, and I quote, thoughts, and then there's a list of people here that Yemach Shmo Jabnik wants me to comment on. I'm just looking at the list right here. Every single one of these people is bad. Every single one of these people. So you're going to hear me make lots of negative comments now. Look, we live in a generation where, especially in the entertainment business, because most of these people are in the music or entertainment business, people are evil. The only people you can't, you know, it's almost impossible for you to get a job in Hollywood or in the music industry unless you're evil, unless you represent evil and support evil. And these people that the Yemach Shmo Jabnik is asking me about are all evil. Okay. Let's start out with Dorit Musayef. Dorit Musayef, she's an Israeli Jewish woman, and she's married to the president of Iceland. So it's an intermarriage, which of course is a very serious sin. I mean, she's very wealthy. She was a very wealthy Jew, very wealthy in the jewelry business. So she could easily have gotten almost any husband she wanted in Israel. Instead, she decided to commit the sin of intermarrying. She grew up in Israel, even though she's ashamed to be Israeli. She wanted to enter Israel on a British passport. She refused to use her Israeli passport. They had to detain her at the airport. There was an incident with her. You know, she's just she's typical. I mean, she's typical. She is an example of Jews who attain power and money, and then they want to assimilate, and they want to set a terrible example for the whole Jewish people. And we now, and she is, again, she's the wife of the president of Iceland. I mean, how crazy. What a terrible sin. What a terrible sin. Why would a wealthy Jewish woman who had the opportunity to set a good example for the Jewish people, why would she do something with all that, with her money? If she helped us, she could save the world. She could save the Jewish people, which would save the world with her money. Instead, this is what she devotes herself to, promoting intermarriage. And next question is about Tarantino. So that's Quentin Tarantino, who is the film director and actor. His films are immoral. They promote violence. They promote the most immoral violence, as if it's no big deal, and he's an immoral person. So obviously I don't like someone like that. And then Eli Roth has worked with Tarantino on some of these films. Eli Roth also glorifies violence in films. He makes brutal violence seem like it's no big deal. This is an everyday occurrence, and actually glorifies it in the films. Again, a bad influence. And then Yamash Morajabnik asked me about Marilyn Manson. Oh, what a sick person this is. This is someone whose stage name is Marilyn Manson. I don't remember what his original birth name is. Unfortunately, it's a shame he was born. But anyway, I don't remember what his original birth name was. But it's his stage name, and it's in honor of Marilyn Monroe and the mass murderer Charles Manson. Can you imagine to use a stage name in honor of Charles Manson, the mass murderer, the cult leader and mass murderer who murdered innocent people for no reason? I mean, just completely sick, evil animal who was caught possessing Nazi memorabilia, who was sued for sexually harassing another man. I mean, just a sick... He also sexually harassed women. Just a sick, disgusting person in every way. And now, Howard Stern. The next person on the list is Howard Stern. Completely filthy, foul-mouthed, immoral person who, again, uses his fame and his wealth for evil and not for good. The Beastie Boys is the next group on the list. They're on the list. The Beastie Boys are Jews. I think they're all Jews. I don't know, but most of them are certainly Jewish. I think they're all Jews. And these are Jews who imitate black hip-hop and do so-called hip-hop, which is garbage, which isn't even music. It's garbage. It's noise. These are worthless, immoral degenerates. Instead of being a light unto the nations, a holy nation, and a nation of priests, which is what the Jewish people are supposed to be, they descend to the lowest levels of the jungles of Africa to find their inspiration. And then the next group on the list is Village People. Oh, that's a group from the 70s that promoted homosexual music and homosexual costumes and the homosexual lifestyle. Even though, I think, by the way, some of the people in the group were actually not gay. Some of them were not homosexual. But they made money catering. Some of them were and some of them weren't. I think it was mixed. But they made money catering to that image. So, of course, they promoted degeneracy and immorality and evil. And then the next group on the list, and then the next one on the list is Public Enemy. Okay, Public Enemy, of course, this is just black hip-hop morons and vicious Jew haters. They made openly anti-Semitic comments repeatedly, you know, saying that the Jews are the source of most of the evil in the world. The Jews are the source of most of the evil in the world. You mean the Jews are the reason why you're illegitimate and your children you're illegitimate and you have illegitimate children? And black people sell drugs to their own children and babies in their own communities. They sell crack to their own children for money and then glorify the crack dealers and glorify all the most monstrous figures in their community. And then you sing songs about brutalizing women. And you're filled with hatred and envy for the one people, the Jews, for a people, the Jews, that brought morals into the world. That brought God's laws into the world and God's Bible into the world. Them you hate. And you talk about, and the Jews bring evil into the world? You bring evil into the world, you filthy animals. That's Public Enemy. Jealous, nasty, subhuman morons with an IQ in the single digits. And the next is Tupac. Oh, Tupac. That's another black rap moron who thankfully was killed by his fellow blacks. And then Biggie. Biggie, oh, that's... Biggie. I assume you mean the Notorious Big. I don't even know, he had so many names. I think Biggie, you mean the Notorious Big. Another black hip hop imbecile, again with an IQ in the single digits, who was again killed by his fellow blacks. He was killed by his fellow blacks. Tupac was killed by his fellow blacks. And then they blame the Jews for their problem. The Jews are the only people that ever gave these people a break and supported them when they didn't deserve any support. And these ungrateful monsters then attack the Jewish people with their anti-Semitism. So that's the list. That's what I think of that list, Yamash Shmota Jobnik. Thank you for the question, and now we go to the great Wandering Samurai 81. Your thoughts on these three Jews, Jerry Lewis, Mel Brooks, and Woody Allen, unquote. Okay, we got another three, another list of the disgusting people. Jerry Lewis, intermarried, assimilated, never did one good thing for his people. This is a guy who's worth huge amounts of money. He had to intermarry, of course. He had to assimilate. And he never did one good thing for the Jewish people with all his money and fame. And he was very famous and was in movies and had television shows and was all over the place. Loaded. I mean, made a fortune. Can you imagine the good he could have done for the Jewish people? And he still could. He's still alive. But he could have done, I mean, when he was younger, if he had supported Rabbi Kahana, I mean, the good he could have done. Instead, intermarried, assimilated, never did one good thing. And Mel Brooks also intermarried to Anne Bancroft. Immoral films that he made, where he thought he was mocking the Nazis, but in some of them, he actually made the Nazis. They don't look that bad in his film. They look better than the Jews that he portrays. And by the way, another interesting aspect of Mel Brooks, he's also the cousin of Murray and Andrew Young. Murray and Andrew Young were the two rats, the two snitches that snitched on me and got me arrested when I went to prison in the bombing case. The informers were Murray and Andrew Young. Murray Young, I think, is gone now. I hope so. I think he's burning in Gehenom already, Bezrat Hashem, God willing. But his son Andrew Young is still an electrician or something like that in Florida. They left New York. They ran away from New York after they snitched. And they moved to Florida. Their cousin is Mel Brooks. And Woody Allen. Oh, the ultimate symbol of the ugly, cowardly, self-hating, intermarried Jew. And a pervert. I mean, this is a guy who was having an affair with Mia Farrow. I don't know what she saw in him. I don't know why she would have an affair with a cockroach like this. But anyway, Mia Farrow had an affair with him. And suddenly, Woody Allen discovered when he was in his 50s, that he was also attracted to Mia Farrow's adopted daughter. And so he married his girlfriend's adopted daughter. He started taking nude pictures of her when she was a teenager. He was in his 50s, she was a teenager, and he started taking pictures of her in the nude. I mean, and then married her. Anyway, another sick piece of garbage. Of course, anti-Israel signs petitions against Israel and against his own people. Naturally, a backstabbing, filthy scum of the earth piece of subhuman degeneracy. Thank you, Wandering Samurai. Okay, now that we've had all that negativity, we go to our... And again, I don't blame Wandering Samurai or Yimach Shmo Dejavnik for asking, but it's just that we live in a generation where figures like this in the entertainment industry are very, very evil people, generally. I don't have anything good to say about them. And now we go on to the great Joe Gutfeld, who writes, and I quote, Shalom Chaim, what do you think about the owner of the LA Clippers being accused of making racially charged remarks? Thank you, thanks, unquote. Well, he's another animal, by the way, Sterling, because he's an 80-year-old guy who leaves his wife to go with a 25-year-old half-black, ugly creature that he went with, dumps his wife for that, and is having an affair with this 25-year-old girl. And then but the beautiful part about it is she stabs him in the back by recording the conversation, a private conversation of him saying he doesn't want her to bring blacks to the game. And the reason he didn't want her to bring blacks to the game, by the way, is because he was jealous. Because she was also having sexual relations with these black players at the game. She was having sexual relations with him. And she was having sex, of course, an 80-year-old guy, of course, she was doing it because he's very wealthy. Obvious. No, she was in love with him. I mean, come on. And she was also fooling around with the black players. So he was jealous. So he said, don't bring them to the game. He said, don't bring blacks to the game. And oh, that was privately recorded. Now he's banned for life. And they're trying to force him to sell the team now that he's banned for life for a remark that he made in a private conversation that was taped by a woman who was betraying him, who decided to betray him. You make some remark that black people don't like and that self-hating whites don't like in a private conversation. You can be taped. It's exposed to the whole world, what you said. And then you're banned for life. Is Al Sharpton, by the way, banned for life? For saying that all whites are crackers? For calling Jews diamond dealers? For supporting Louis Farrakhan? Is Louis Farrakhan banned for life for praising Hitler and saying that Hitler was a great man? And that all whites are devils? The whole white race is going to be exterminated? Was Louis Farrakhan ever banned for life? You know how many federal contracts his evil organization has received? Barack Hussein Obama, the President of the United States, attended Louis Farrakhan's rally in 1996, the Million Man March. He's considered to be a wise man in the black community. Yeah, hehe. And he says all whites are devils, the whole white race is going to be exterminated. But let this guy, this idiot from the LA Clippers, say one bad thing in a private conversation. Farrakhan, by the way, openly says it to everybody that he hates all white people. They're all going to be exterminated. They all deserve to die in a Holocaust. And he said the Jews deserve a Holocaust as well. The Jews should all be exterminated. That's fine. But this guy from the LA Clippers, in a private conversation, says something and he's banned for life. Look what a sick, racist society we live in. This really is a racist society. It's racist against whites in general and Jews in particular. This is the sickest country. I mean, the United States and Israel are competing with each other to find out who's going to be more sick and suicidal and insane right now. I don't know which country is worse right now. They're both competing to get to the bottom of the barrel. Anyway, so I don't like this guy, but what's being done to him, the owner of the LA Clippers, what's being done to him is really an outrage and really shows what type of insane country this has become, what type of society this has become. Look what they did to Paula Deen, the cook from Georgia, because she used the word nigger in the past. In private conversation, she used the word nigger. So what? Louis Farrakhan says whites are all devils. Now, I personally would not endorse using the word nigger, but if Louis Farrakhan can say all whites should be exterminated, why should Paula Deen be blacklisted forever? Why should the head of the owner of the LA Clippers be blacklisted or banned for life? What type of evil, sick, racist, crazy system is being employed here in this society? It's unbelievable. Thank you, Joe Gutfeld. And now we go to the great Binyamin Yisrael, who writes, and I quote, "In the past, JTF thought Pat Toomey was right-wing and Santorum supported Specter rather than having a real right-wing senator. When did Toomey change? I never heard about Toomey in the media. Why doesn't his name come up anymore?" Unquote. I never hear about Toomey in the media. Actually, I never hear about Toomey in the media is what Binyamin wrote. Okay. We supported Pat Toomey. First of all, you know that we have a policy of working against self-hating Jewish politicians because it's a chilul Hashem, it's a desecration of God's name when you have these self-hating Jews serving in office. Arlen Specter was the ultimate example of a self-hating Jew. He was a senator from Pennsylvania, and he was a self-hating Jew. And so when Pat Toomey ran against him, of course we supported Pat Toomey. Now, Pat Toomey, when he was running, at least on his platform, he seemed to be right-wing. He ran on a right-wing platform in the Republican primary. We didn't know when they become senators, they don't keep their word. And then they change afterwards. But we didn't, at the time, we took him at his word. We assumed that when he was saying these right-wing things that he meant what he said. Now, I can't read minds, you know, we assume that he meant what he said. Since he became a senator, he's more and more moving towards supporting the gays and supporting various other things that are that are sellouts, that are a sellout, that are not right wing at all. So, you know, that's a you know. So we're disappointed in him. By the way, despite the fact that we're disappointed in him, we probably will support him when he runs for re-election, because I'm sure the left-wing Democrat who runs against him will probably be worse than him. So we'll probably support him as a lesser of the evils anyway. I don't know why his name doesn't come up. I don't know what he's doing in the Senate. I think, like most senators, he's doing very little. Thank you, Binyamin. And we now go to our great friend Papercut, who writes, and I quote, "Chaim, the KKK synagogue shooter is a Democrat. Please contrast this with Clive Bundy's Republican, non-racism, racism, and the media spin control," unquote. Well, I couldn't agree with you more. And it's not, you know, it's not just the KKK synagogue shooter who is a figure on the fringes. I mean, he's a fringe figure. I'm not saying he's not dangerous. I mean, someone on the fringes can be dangerous. Adolf Hitler, Yimach Shmo V'Zichro, was also a fringe figure until he became dangerous. So fringe figures can someday become dangerous people. But there are people who represent mass movements with millions of followers, with many millions of followers, tens of millions of followers, like Louis Farrakhan, who are openly the most vicious Nazi racists and Jew haters you could find. Louis Farrakhan, Jesse Jackson, Al Sharpton. And the media completely supports them. And everybody supports them. All the politicians meet with them. The President of the United States, Barack Hussein Obama, is a racist and an anti-Semite. Barack Hussein Obama, in his book, and we have this again, we did a great video on this during the presidential campaign, which you can still find on YouTube. In fact, it's been uploaded several times on YouTube. A video that we did where you hear Barack Hussein Obama in his own voice reading from his book. You know those books where you have the author reads from the book? Obama did a deal like that with his book publisher when he wrote his book. And in his book, he makes racist remarks against white people. Obama is a racist. He's an anti-white racist. He's also an anti-Semite. And he's president of the United States. This poor guy, Clive Bundy. What did he do? What did he do that's so terrible? Because he wants his cattle to be on land that his family has owned for many years? And if the federal government comes in and starts saying, no, all of this belongs to the federal government, please give me a break. I know that everybody's turning on Clive Bundy, and all the sellouts and Fox News and everybody else are condemning him now. I don't condemn him. I don't see what he's done that's wrong. I don't think he's done anything wrong. If he later on makes remarks that are anti-Semitic or some other remark, that would be a different story. But right now, I haven't seen anything like that. All he said was that black people, if they were picking cotton, would be better off than being dependent on the government. It's better to pick cotton than to be dependent on the government. He said it's even better to be a slave and pick cotton than to be on government programs. In other words, it's better to work than be dependent. That's what he said. Is that racist? I don't think that's racist. I think the worst thing you can do to black people, the worst type of racism toward black people, is keeping them on welfare and food stamps and all these government programs. That's the ultimate example of racism. I don't think Clive Bundy is a racist. I really don't. I think the news media that are attacking him are the racists. I think all the liberals in the Democrat and Republican parties that are attacking him are the racists. So, you know, I actually think, by the way, with the ranchers and the farmers that were, you know, all the ranchers that were backing him up in Nevada, I actually thought this was pretty healthy. I actually enjoyed watching that. I was hoping that this would lead to people waking up and understanding that the federal government has become a monstrosity, and it's ordinary, law-abiding, decent citizens have a right to work on their land without being victims of this assault by the federal government on their basic rights. That's my opinion. So I support Clive Bundy. Anyway, thank you, Papercut. And we now go to the great Kalman ben Menachem, who writes, and I quote, Reb Chaim, is the America we knew and loved gone forever? Thank you, unquote. It's gone right now. I hope it's not gone forever. It could come back. It could be revived. If we have the right events or the right people or the right leadership, you have times in history when the pendulum swings back and forth. It's possible. It's still, there's still a chance. But the opportunity for that is getting slimmer and slimmer. It's becoming more and more difficult to see how that's going to happen because demographically America is being lost. The demographic catastrophe we see happening here with this mass invasion of third world people, that is going to change America forever. That's why anyone who proposes amnesty for illegal aliens is betraying America. And it's the end of the country. So the question is, what leaders do you turn to? What are going to be the policies that we need to have? And will the American people wake up in time? That's the question. That's the question. Is it still possible to save America? I believe it's still possible. I believe it's going to be difficult because of the demographic problems and because of the fact that the American people are so apathetic about this. I think it's going to be difficult. But I still think it's possible. I still think if certain events take place, I still think it's possible. Let's put it that way. It's not hopeless yet. Not completely hopeless yet. Thank you, Kalman. And we now go to the great Dr. Dan, the voice of reason, common sense, and logic. Yeah, that happens on our Ask page. You know, sometimes when you're typing something, if you accidentally press a certain button or whatever, accidentally press a certain key, you can't get your question in, and the question comes in only partially. I'm sorry, Dr. Dan, that happened this week. I'm really sorry. I always look forward to your great remarks and questions and your great insight. I'm really sorry, Dr. Dan. And now we go to Spara, who I'm not that familiar with, but seems to be relatively new on the forum. Seems to be pretty new on the forum. I don't recall Spara. Forgive me if I'm wrong. If I've spoken to you before, then forgive me if I'm wrong. I just don't recall. And Spara writes, and I quote, are American Jewish conservative counter-jihad bloggers being coerced into tacitly siding with Ukrainian Nazis, unquote. I don't know. I think that I'm not on anybody's side in that conflict. The Ukrainians certainly were Nazis. They did murder hundreds of thousands of Jews during the Holocaust. They supported Hitler and supported the Nazis. There's no question about that. I would not support the Ukrainians under any circumstances. I would not support the Ukrainians. The Russians, though, also have a history for centuries of persecuting and murdering the Jewish people. So I'm not sympathetic to them either. And, you know, I know very well the history of what the Russians did to Jews for centuries. So I don't support either side in that conflict. And if there are people who are standing up for the Ukrainians and supporting the Ukrainians, if they're Jews, that I think is crazy. Because the Ukrainians certainly supported Hitler and supported the Nazis and participated enthusiastically in the Holocaust. That is all true. Thank you, Spara. And we now go to the great Lewinsky Stinks, Dr. Brennan Rocks, who writes, and I quote, please pronounce this in a self-hating Jewish accent. It's Jewish American Heritage Month. Oy vey! Unquote. Okay. Please discuss Brother Nathaniel Kapner and why it is that John Nazi Kerry, Yimach Shmo V'Zichro, is so very popular with American Jewish voters. Thank you. Well, first of all, Brother Nathaniel Kapner, this disgusting, self-hating Jewish Nazi who desperately wants to destroy his own people and makes videos that Hitler would be proud of. I mean, what a sick, ugly cowardly, disgusting, Judenrat Kapo piece of garbage. I mean, what can I say about him? He will be burning in a very, very hot place in hell. And as far as John Kerry being popular, I don't think John Kerry's popular now with American Jewish voters. The fact that there are Jews who support Kerry, of course, is an example of how many sick Jews there are, but right now, I don't think he's that popular because he's really, really made so many anti-Semitic attacks on Israel that even some of the self-hating Jews who voted for Barack Hussein Obama are uncomfortable with him now. So I don't think he's so popular now with American Jewish voters, but there's no doubt that the majority of American Jewish voters are self-hating. That's a fact. 78% voted for Obama in 2008. And I think 73% or something like that voted for him in 2012. If that isn't self-hatred, I don't know what is. They committed a terrible, terrible crime against their own people. And they will answer for it. Thank you, Lewinsky Stinks. And, you know, let's hope that at least a large number of American Jews wake up and recognize the truth. That's one of the things JTF in our English language movement wants to achieve. Thank you, Lewinsky Stinks. And now we go to our great friend Chicago Jew, who writes, and I quote, "I am not as appalled at Kerry's Israel apartheid statement as I am the Jews here and in Israel that agree with it," unquote. Oh, of course, I agree with you completely. You know, the self-hating Jews who are against their own people, that's always much worse and much more outrageous than somebody from another. I mean, we know from human nature that sometimes people hate other people that are different than they are. And we know that happens in human nature. That's something we expect. It's not, again, it's to hate somebody with no justification is a terrible thing. It's a terrible sin. But we know that happens. On the other hand, when people betray their own brothers and sisters, that's really sick. That is really sick. And you're right. There's no shortage of people like the. I put up a post recently about the Anti-Defamation League and Abe Foxman, again defending John Kerry and saying that he's a true friend of Israel, and all these other Jewish organizations that came out and said he's a true friend of Israel. He's a true friend of Israel. Oh, what sick beasts. Just sick. These are the same people that said Roosevelt is a true friend of Israel when he murdered 6 million Jews during the Holocaust. Sick, evil people. These are also the same people who tell us Obama is a true friend. Obama, Kerry, all the Jew haters, Clinton, all the Jew haters that work to destroy Israel, they're true friends of Israel. The fact is Israel's worst enemies are precisely the Jews that make those types of statements. Thank you, Chicago Jew. And now we go to the great LKZ, who writes, and I quote, "Shalom." And LKZ is writing about the Edenic Kingdom. Are they actually associated with the UN? If so, why does the UN support them? That is a black cult that has nothing to do with Jews and no connection to Jews or Judaism. And I don't know if the UN, I don't know what the UN's connection is to them. I have no idea, but they're just a black cult of people who are trying to weasel their way into Israel and weasel their way to get support from Jews. They have absolutely no connection to Jews or to Judaism, none whatsoever. And they should be rejected and condemned for the frauds that they are. Thank you, LKZ. And we go now to our great friend Da Vinci, who writes, and I quote, "Please comment on the arrest of Paul Weston in England for the simple fact that he quoted Winston Churchill about Islam," unquote. Unbelievable. Absolutely unbelievable. He was quoting from a book that Winston Churchill wrote about Islam, where he said that Islam, I don't know if he used the quote, but I know that one of the quotes of Winston Churchill is that the Quran is the Mein Kampf of war. That was used, that of course came later, because he was actually quoting from a book that Winston Churchill wrote in 1899. But later on, Winston Churchill eventually compared the Quran to Mein Kampf, to Adolf Hitler's book, Mein Kampf. So, you know, this was in a day when people were willing, when some people at least were willing to tell the truth. And Paul Weston was simply quoting. All he was doing was quoting from the book, reading from the book and quoting. And they placed him under arrest for that. I mean, that's England. That's what England has become. England is not a free country. England is an Islamicized nightmare, just as all of Europe has become an Islamicized nightmare. It's a nightmare. The Muslims are taking over everything. And you're not allowed to say anything. You're not allowed to tell any truth. If anyone speaks the truth, they're in a lot of trouble. You can actually you get arrested for telling the truth. The truth is illegal in England, and the truth is illegal in Europe, and the truth is illegal in most of the world. Thank you, Da Vinci. And we now go to the great Nekama, who writes, and I quote, upon the liberation of Dachau, a Gentile U.S. Indian soldier named First Lieutenant Jack Bushyhead Zal. Zal means Zichrono Livracha, his memory should be immortalized, ordered the killing of 346 SS officers. Please comment, unquote. Well, there's no question that Lieutenant Jack Bushyhead was a righteous Gentile. He was a lieutenant in the U.S. Army from Indian descent, American Indian. And he did order the killing of SS officers, but from what I've seen, although there was one book that writes that hundreds of SS officers were killed, most of the people who've researched that say that that number is inflated, that the most dozens of SS officers were killed, that it wasn't hundreds. And I tend to believe that almost all the researchers that came to that conclusion are right. I don't think that high number of SS officers were actually killed. I think we're talking about dozens, which is unfortunate because, of course, they all deserve to be killed, obviously. All of them deserve to have happened to them what they did to over 6 million Jews. But this guy, Lieutenant Bushyhead, even if he didn't kill hundreds, he tried to kill SS officers and gave an order to kill SS officers, I do believe that he was a righteous Gentile. Thank you, Nekama. And we now go to the great Mike Ben-Avi, who writes, and I quote, why do all the Jew haters like to misuse the term apartheid and say that Israel is an apartheid state? Please explain how Israel is actually the opposite and is too liberal toward its vicious enemies, unquote. Oh, of course that's true. It's a joke. And it shows, you know what it shows? It shows that no matter how much the Jews bend over backwards, no matter how much the Jews try to appease their enemies and give in to their enemies and try to buy their enemies off, it doesn't work. The world will still say that Israel is racist and Israel is apartheid and Israel is doing all these terrible things. The world is still going to say that. So why be concerned about what they say? They're going to be against you anyway. You might as well do what has to be done for survival. If they're going to say that the Jews are doing all these terrible things, just get the Arabs out. Out. Begin a program to encourage the Arabs to leave Israel. Stop giving them free electricity and free water and free food and free medicine. Everything for free. The Jews in Israel don't get. Jews in Israel don't get all of these things for free. But Arabs get everything for free. They get everything handed to them on a silver platter and are allowed to do almost anything they want in Israel. And then the whole world points the finger at Israel, and then the Arab world wants to destroy Israel, commit genocide against Israel, and the whole world acts like it's the Israelis who are the bad guys. So why be concerned about world opinion when it's against you anyway? Do what you have to do to survive. And in the end, I have news for the Israeli Jews that are so worried, oh, if Israel does this, it'll be terrible. I have news for you. They will actually respect you more in the end if you do what has to be done, if you take the strong measures. In the end, they'll still be against you, but they'll respect you. They'll at least respect you. In this situation where Israel gives in and gives in and gives in, they accuse Israel of every bad thing under the sun, all lies, and accuse Israel of doing all these terrible things, while Israel is doing the opposite. And so Israel is hated and despised and held in contempt. If Israel were strong and did what Rabbi Kahana said we should do and what our movement says we should do, at least the Jews would be respected. Thank you, Mike. And we now go to our great friend Tag Mechir Tzedek, who writes, and I quote, why celebrate Yom Ha'atzmaut, Independence Day, when it wasn't a complete victory? Hellenists took over and are still in power. They did crimes against Am Yisrael, unquote. Because Yom Ha'atzmaut, Independence Day, is a day when, after 2,000 years of wandering and homelessness and helplessness, the Jewish people were brought back to their homeland. Even if the country is run by evil people, and the reason it's run by evil people is because the Jewish people supported them. Most Jews supported Ben-Gurion and supported these evil people and allowed them to take over. So it's the fault of that generation. That was not a righteous generation. But miraculously, God gave us our sovereignty in our country again. Biblical prophecy is being fulfilled, and we have a country again, and we're back home again. That is something, if we don't celebrate that, then what is there to celebrate? I mean, if the 2,000 years, we're back in our homeland, and we have the ingathering of the exiles, Kibbutz HaGaluyot, as all the prophets predicted, as what we pray for every day, and this happened in our day, and we don't celebrate that, and outnumbered 100-1, the Jewish state wins miraculous victories and survives and defeats its enemies, and we have a Jewish army again, even though the Jewish army does a lot of bad things. Nevertheless, we have a Jewish army and a Jewish country and a Jewish homeland again. And if we don't celebrate that, then how could you not celebrate that? The miracle is breathtaking. No people in history has ever had anything that even comes close to this. Being exiled for 2,000 years and coming back to your country 20 centuries later and winning victories when you're outnumbered 100-1 and the whole world is against you because your enemies have all the oil and because the world hates you and you still win? Of course we're going to celebrate. Of course we have to celebrate it. Of course. Now, the fact that Hellenists took over, that's something we have to fight against. And that's something we have to change. And the day will come when it will be changed. We never accept that. We will fight against that. The state of Israel is holy and sacred. The government of Israel is evil. And we fight against the government of Israel. But the state of Israel, the concept of a Jewish state and Jewish sovereignty and Jewish independence, that is sacred. There's a difference between the state of Israel and the evil politicians in the government of Israel. Lahavdil be'elef alfei havdalot. There's a tremendous difference between those two concepts. They couldn't be more different. And Tag Mechir now writes, Perush HaMakabi Shiur. Okay, which means a lesson from our leader, Moreno Verabenu, our teacher and our rabbi, Meir Kahana Zecher Tzaddik V'Gadosh Livracha Hashem Yikom Damo, from his great book, Perush HaMakabi. One of the things Rabbi Kahana writes about is Israel's lack of faith and evil behavior that would ordinarily bring complete destruction upon any nation. And in fact, other nations that engaged in the type of evil behavior that Israel engaged in were destroyed. So why wasn't Israel completely destroyed? Ordinarily, you would think that this would bring about complete destruction because the Jews betrayed God's covenant and violated God's covenant and refused to do what God commanded them to do and were warned and did many evil things. So why aren't they completely destroyed? And the answer is for God's name's sake. Because the nations of the world, Umot HaOlam, the nations of the world, would say that God doesn't exist and his Bible is false if Israel were destroyed. If Israel were destroyed, God forbid, then everybody would say, oh, you see, where is God? Where's your God? You have no God. This is nonsense. The Bible's nonsense. You talk about God is nonsense. This is all nonsense. He doesn't exist. Look at what happened. You go to Israel and then you're destroyed. So for his name's sake, so that won't happen, because of his mercy and his love, he doesn't want the world to believe that he doesn't exist. Not that he needs the world to believe in him, but humanity needs it. For his name's sake, he does not destroy Israel. Many Jews suffer terrible, terrible, agonizing punishment. And many Jews have been killed, and only a remnant of the Jewish people has returned. Israel's population now is 6 million Jews. There should be 770 million Jews or 780 million Jews in the world today. But because of assimilation and all the persecution and everything else that happened, the number of Jews that survived is a tiny remnant of what it should be. So God does punish Israel, but he will not ever completely destroy Israel. Never. Because Israel represents his name. He is the God of Israel. He is a God that is represented by the people of Israel, by the Jewish people. He gave them the Bible. And so when the Jewish people are defeated, it's a chilul Hashem. It's a desecration of God's name, because it makes it seem like God is defeated, like God didn't have the power to bring victory to his own people. Like the Nazis, Yimach Shmam, the German Nazis, Yimach Shmam, in the death camp said, "Where is your God now? Tell your God to save you while I'm throwing you in the ovens and the gas chambers. Let's see your God save you now." And they laughed at the Jews as they threw them in the gas chambers. That is a chilul Hashem. That's a desecration of God's name. But when Israel wins tremendous, miraculous, spectacular victories, that's a kiddush Hashem. That's God's name being sanctified. Moses with the golden calf. Moses discovers when he's in Mount Sinai that the Jews have started worshipping a golden calf. It's actually the Erev Rav that actually worshipped the golden calf, but the Jews didn't protest. They didn't speak up. They allowed the Erev Rav to do this. And so Moses finds out that the Jews are committing this terrible crime, and so God says to Moses, "Let me destroy them and I'll make a new nation from you. I'll destroy them completely. And you will be the leader of the new nation. From you, we'll start a whole new nation. And Moses pleads with God and says to God, and pleads with God to not to do this to the Jews. And even says, "Take my name out of the Torah if you're going to do this." But the final winning argument that Moses has before God is when he says, "If you do this, then the Egyptians are going to say, and all the nations of the world are going to say, 'You see, their God had the power to get them out of Egypt, but didn't have the power to bring them into the land of Israel, so he destroyed them in the desert. He had the power to win against Pharaoh, but he didn't have the power to win against all the kings in the land of Israel. So he decided to get rid of them in the desert." And it'll be a chilul Hashem, it'll be a desecration of God's name. That convinces God. God does not want the nations of the world to be able to mock and ridicule and say, "You see, there is no God." And that's why God brought the Jews back to Israel after 2,000 years. Not because the Jews deserved it, they didn't. The generation that was brought back didn't deserve it. God brought them back for his name's sake, so that there would be an end to 2,000 years of the world saying, "Where is your God? What are you talking about? What God? Look at you. You don't have a country, you have nothing. You're humiliated and defeated all the time. Why doesn't your God, if you have a God, why doesn't he protect you or defend you or do something for you?" God decided to bring an end to that. And the beginning of bringing an end to that is the return of the Jewish people to their historic homeland. That is something that Rabbi Kahana teaches us in Perush HaMakabi and does it so magnificently. Thank you, Tag Mechir. And we Tag Mechir Tzedek, and now we go to our great friend Maimonides, who writes, and I quote, "Shalom Chaim, do you believe it is possible to have a one world government? And if so, is it desirable?" Unquote. Well, there's never going to be a one world government, because Israel is one country that can never be destroyed. You might have people who try to establish a one world government, but they will never destroy the Jewish state. That won't happen. Is it desirable? Absolutely not. In the next world, Ba'olam Haba, in the next world, we're going to have one world ruled by God. God is going to be the king of the world. His human, there'll be a human king, the Mashiach, Melech HaMashiach, the Messiah. But God will openly rule over the world. Then you'd have a situation. We have different nations of the world, but the whole world is united and only the righteous are in the world. The evil people have been destroyed. And then that's a different situation. Then you'd have a world ruled literally by God. But in this world, with human behavior and the evil of human beings and the evil behavior of human beings, the type of people that want one world government are the most evil people on the face of the earth. The multinational corporate billionaires and other beasts that try to promote one world government and the UN, we see how evil they are. Of course it would be a nightmare. And so it's something that we absolutely have to oppose and fight against and fight against with all of our energy. Thank you, Maimonides. And we now go to the great Imaknik, who writes, and I quote, "How would you solve income inequality?" Unquote. You can never completely solve it because there's some people who are going to earn more money than others. You can never completely solve income inequality. Everybody should have an equal chance, an equal opportunity to achieve their dreams in a free society. People should be given an equal opportunity. And when I say equal opportunity, that term has been misused because it's a euphemism for affirmative action and for quotas. I mean it in the true sense of the word, not the phony, racist, anti-white, anti-Semitic sense that it's been used for. Everybody should have an equal chance at achieving whatever they could achieve. But you cannot guarantee outcome. You can't have a guaranteed outcome. Some people will succeed, some people will fail, some people will become wealthy, some people will be poor, some people will be in the middle. That's just the way it is. But you can elevate everybody as a whole if you have a truly free market and true competition and an end to oppressive government bureaucracy. That gives people a chance to rise, and all of society rises as a result. Thank you, Imaknik. And we now go to the great EB22, who writes, and I quote, "Please discuss your thoughts about the following organizations that voted in favor of J Street." One, Amenu. Oh, Amenu is an extreme left-wing Judenrat capo organization that works to undermine Israel's survival and works to encourage America and other nations of the world to do everything they can to pressure Israel to commit suicide. They are the ultimate examples of Judenrat capos, of complete Jewish traitors. As is J Street, by the way. J Street, they're also complete Jewish traitors. And EB22 now writes, Jewish Council for Political Affairs? I thought it was the Jewish Council for Public Affairs, if I'm right. I think it's the Jewish Council for Public Affairs. But anyway, maybe I'm mistaken, but that's what I thought it was. That's an arm of the UJA Federation. Also completely evil, complete garbage. Lie and mislead people. And really work to, it's like AIPAC, which is supposed to be the Israel lobby. It's like the Arab lobby. They do everything they can to undermine Israel and undermine the Jewish people. They're against more sanctions on Iran. They're against cutting back any foreign aid to Israel's Arab Nazi enemies. I mean, they do everything they can. Even the stupid things that they do influence are always very bad for Jews. Very bad. And these Jewish organizations, in the Conference of Presidents of Major American Jewish Organizations, that's the name of the umbrella group. It's called the Conference of Presidents of Major American Jewish Organizations, the Kings of Kings. What a farce. All of these groups, the Anti-Defamation League, the American Jewish Congress, the American Jewish Committee, Hadassah, and Young Israel and these other groups, even the Orthodox Union. You know what they're like? They're like the guy who catches the football, right? Catches the football, runs, and scores a touchdown for the other team. They're always scoring touchdowns for our enemies. They're always undermining their own people. It is such a miracle that the Jews exist with treacherous, backstabbing filth like this. It's just it's a miracle, which is why it's so important that we become a mass movement and that we get to represent the Jewish people and Jewish interests. Thank you, EB22. And I want to thank everybody for another program that I very much enjoy doing. Until next week, shalom.